You're listening to Songtime Radio. I am your host, Adam Miller, and we are joined today by Jimmy Dodd, who is the author of a new book called Survive or Thrive, Six Relationships Every Pastor Needs. It's a pastor serve resource. This is an interesting little book. Jimmy, why don't you get us started by telling us a little bit about yourself and as a pastor yourself, this is something that you're passionate about, helping other pastors.
Yeah, thanks very much, Adam. Just a bit about myself. I pastored for about 20 years. I had the privilege to pastor just around Chicago, and then I was in Boston for a while, and I was in South Carolina. Then I planted a church in Kansas City in about 1991, and my wife and I mean, it was just one of those really fun times in life, and God blessed it, and it was going well, and I think that you would look at it and say, man, church is really thriving. But after about probably about 6 years, I just became very, very aware that I've got a lot of stuff on the inside that I just have a real fear that if everybody found out, that they might not want me to be like their pastor anymore. I just thought I've just got some jealousy and some greed and lust, and my heart just felt dark a lot of times. And, you know, no major moral failure, but there was just enough stuff in my life. I just thought, I don't know if I want anybody to really be my really, really close friend. And I just thought, gosh, I'm operating in just a lot of fear. And I tell you, God was very gracious because he had some folks that really spoke into my life and some good friends. And there was just a big change in my life in about 1998. Took just a major turn because I just became a lot more honest about myself because I believed the gospel. And I think that just allowed a freedom. And it changed the way that I preached, changed the way that I taught a lot of different things. And it was interesting because I hadn't ever planned to start to spend more and more. I just hadn't actually planned to have any type of a pastor's ministry. But pastors begin to call and say, and I've heard you preach a few times, and it just really seems like you would be a really safe guy to talk with about some things. And so I began to meet with pastors a lot in about 1998. And then after about a year of that, it just became very clear that this is what this is my calling. So it was very hard, but I mean, I walked away from the church along with my wife, and we launched this ministry of Pastor Serve, and it's been a ride ever since. And God has opened up more and more doors for us to love pastors and love the church and love its leaders, and that's what we've been doing.
Now, what is the cause of this concern that you felt as a pastor who felt a little bit maybe isolated? What do you think is feeding into that need for pastors to feel that they have to be a kind of a maverick in some ways?
Yeah, I think the word that you used, I think it's exactly the right word. I think it's just isolation. I think that we have a fear, and I think that we oftentimes get prop up pastors, and we think, well, good heavens, if you're the pastor of the church, then you probably don't have the same struggles I have, because I will struggle with all of these sins, but you probably don't have these struggles because, you know what, you're a pastor. But pastors have exactly the same struggles. They do have marriage challenges, and they do have parenting challenges, and then they do have a hard time as far as money, and they might struggle with greed and jealousy and on and on. They have the exact same problems, but I think that we have, you just over time, that we create this mindset of pastors shouldn't have those struggles. Because I think that those are my struggles. And yet pastors have exactly the same struggles. And they have to have a place to go that's safe. And that's a big issue right there, that I think that there's a lot of pastors that don't feel like there's a place where they can go and be completely honest. Because that place is oftentimes, it might be a board, it might be a bishop, it might be the elders, it might be something like a district superintendent. And the fear is, if I am really honest with them, if I share everything about my life, you know what? They might fire me, and I've got a mortgage. I've got kids in college, and so I don't know if I can be. I just don't know if I can be honest with them. And that's the same story we hear over and over again from pastors. But yes, I have a place to go where I should go, and I'm told I should go, but I would never go there because it's not safe. It's not confidential, and I don't know that it might not come back and bite me in a big way.
Now, do you think in some ways the pastor being the one who's in front of everybody is the one who is preaching the gospel, and a lot of people are looking up to them Do you think that they feel the pressure of the spotlight is playing a big role in their and how they talk about their own makeup and even have transparency from the pulpit?
Sure. Yes. Because I think that there is that piece of everybody's heart that we really want to be liked, and we want to be told, "Gosh, you're just a wonderful person." And that can at times feel very, very disingenuous when you think, well, they're saying things about me based upon the fact that I'm up in front, but they really don't know me. They really don't know my heart, and they really don't know my marriage. And so we're fed oftentimes with these, you know, you're amazing and you're wonderful. And we just have to stop and say, you know, that's based on such a small perception of my life. And you know what? It's really not true, because only God is amazing. Me, man, I'm broken. I mean, I am broken, and I have to have Jesus in my life. But I think that we hear those words so often that it just starts to kind of feed that monster of, okay, I'm being propped up higher and higher and higher, which means that the fall will be greater. So I don't know if I can tell them the way it really is, because it would really disappoint them. They would be very disillusioned if they knew all the struggles I have. And it just kind of feeds that whole cycle of you hide and you become more and more isolated, and you're, you know, just not open with people and honest with people, and you don't have friends, and it just feeds that cycle.
Our theme for this year, this whole past year, had been talking about walking worthy of the gospel by which we've been called. And I think that this is something we kind of addressed in different areas, but not so much with pastors, is the idea that we feel the need to walk worthy of the gospel, meaning we feel the need to walk in a way that demonstrates righteousness. But a key element to the gospel is grace. Isn't there a level where transparency needs to show that we are as fallible as the people that we're preaching to?
Well, that's a great question, Adam. I think the answer is it is yes. And that has to be true. We have to understand, okay, you know what, I have to have God's grace as much as you do. I think that the issue is that oftentimes folks in our church might not believe that same thing. And that they might say, well, gosh, I realize I have to have, you know, lots of grace for you as well. But once those issues are actually, actually known, we've got, you know, some story after story about just, I know more and more pastors will have big issues, and they just kind of have the sense of, I can't hide any longer, because it's just exhausting. It's just emotionally exhausting just to go through life and pretend you're a lot better than you actually are. So they're just at that point of breaking, and they're open and they're honest. And then that comes back and that bites them oftentimes. And those stories are very well known. And it's like, well, gosh, I know I need to be more honest, and I know I need to just let more and more people show me grace. And yet I hear stories about these pastors that go and they're open and honest, and they don't actually receive grace. And those are really hard, hard, painful stories, because we all need grace. Pastors need grace. Pastors have strengths, and they have areas in which they're weak. We need to magnify their strengths and give them grace in the areas in which they're weak. And I think that we need to lend them that grace, and we need to show them that grace. And I tell you, once a pastor has that grace and they really start to sense, wow, my church understands I do have some weaknesses, but they're being gracious in those things, that can transform a pastor's life. That can transform a whole church. Absolutely.
Now, your subject of the book is survive or thrive. How much of the pastoral ministry is on that scale, where you're either surviving or you're thriving?
You know what I think the whole thing is? I think it's very hard in that work to actually stay neutral. I think it's like, man, I'm growing in my intimacy with the Lord, with my spouse, with my friendships, or else I'm starting to get to a place where I'm just in more and more trouble. I really don't think that there's like a neutral ground there. I think you have to ask yourself as a pastor just every day, okay, do I really feel like I'm really, really growing in love with my wife and in love with the Lord and in love with my friendships? And if those things aren't actually deepening, you're starting to get to more and more of a very dangerous place.
Now, before I was in ministry, I felt this kind of real struggle of being transparent, because I was a pastor's son, I was a pastor's kid, and I grew up in that kind of spotlight. And And my parents really didn't have those open relationships in our church because I think of this fear that was presiding in my, you know, my parents' understanding of how to do ministry. So I kind of had that fear very early on, right before I got into ministry. And I had to wrestle with that as well of trying to find people that I could connect with. But my struggle is actually finding people that would listen to my concerns, that could actually connect with how I felt about things, because it was such a different life. I there wasn't any of the pastor's kids around that I could actually relate to. How do you connect people with the people that can actually encourage them? Or is it an understanding that you're not going to have somebody that connects with you, but somebody that actually can help you, whether or not they can understand your circumstances?
Right. Gosh, that's a great question. I think that you know, I really think that that's why pastors sort of get about, right now we get about 19,000 calls per year. And I think that's why, because pastors are longing for just that safe place. And I think that there are those who just really know, okay, I've got to have this in my life. I've got to have a place where I can go and just be open and honest. And they long for that. But oftentimes they just don't know where that place is. And so they will call and say, I have tried to find a safe place for so long. Now, I think it can work to have some really, really strong friends in the church. But it's sad, but I think that that's actually a bit rare. But I would really, really encourage people, be a friend of your pastor. And that means you will love your pastor when they do well. You will love your pastor when they don't do well, which means if they really struggle, if they have a fall, you will not walk away from them. You will not walk away and say, well, my gosh, I thought that you were the pastor, so you know what? Get your life straightened out, and then we can start to actually be really good, you know, really, you know, give friends again. That means you were never their friend. You just use them because they were in a place of power and authority. You need to be a real friend to your pastor. Be a friend to them. That is just so critical for people.
You talk about six relationships that pastors need, that denotes that there's a plethora of different personalities there. What are those different dynamics that a pastor needs in their life in relationship?
Yeah, we really, really believe that a pastor needs a boss, trainer, coach, counselor, mentor, and then just a good friend. And if you have those roles filled, the odds of things actually going well skyrocket. And you would be shocked as we talk to more and more pastors who say, well, we're a staff-led church, and so I'm the boss, and I don't have a real trainer because I'm the one that does most of like the teaching, and I've not ever had a pastoral coach. I've not been to counseling ever in my life. I lost touch with my mentor years ago, and if I was completely honest, I don't have a really good friend. And that we always say that person is ripe for a major fall because that person is extremely isolated. And we need to have those really key roles in our life just to help us to be in touch with people and with resources and just a place where we can go and be honest and be real and be open. Those are key relationships for everybody.
As you look at the makeup of churches in America, I suspect that there are a lot of independent, non-denominational churches on the rise, kind of breaking away from the larger kind of presbyteries and denominations. How does a pastor without that already in place community find these six relationships?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the one that we oftentimes are asked about is a boss. I'm told, well, that our church is a big independent church, and so actually it's a staff-led church, and I don't have a boss. And I think that word boss actually scares pastors, you know, that they think, well, if I have a boss, that means that, you know, that they could really suppress me and make me do things I don't want to do, and I just think that that would be really awkward if I had a boss. But, you know, when you have a boss, you have a champion. And I would say that, you know what, if there's not a board, if there's not elders, if there's not a presbytery, if there's not a bishop or whatever it might be, it's really smart to have a board, at least, that you give some power to that can say, you know what, you're working way too many hours. You need to back away. You've been at church every night for weeks and weeks. This is ridiculous. You've got to go home and spend some time with your spouse and your family. When you have a boss, you can have a champion that says you need to back away. Or it might be, you know what? We don't pay you fair at all. We need to pay you much more. It's hard to have that if you don't have a boss like that. So I think a board like that can be a tremendous help. So even if your church, I mean, like, it's not that, you know, type, you know what, form some type of a board, give them the basic authority to say, you know what, don't work over, you know, these times every week, and don't work these nights this week, and we're going to pay you this much per week, and you need to have a, you know, time away with your spouse time each year. You need to have some time to be on like a sabbatical even. You need to have a real strong champion, and we meet more and more pastors that don't take time off, and they work stupid hours, and it's because they don't have anybody there that's saying, hey, you know what, you can't do this. So I think that's just one place where you've got to have a boss, because you have to have a champion.
What are some of the things that that suffer when you're not having all these other relationships in place? You talk a little bit about giving time to your wife and your spouse, your family. Are these the things that pastors don't even realize are suffering at the time?
Yes. I mean, yes. And we do. We have talks with, you know, more and more pastors, and they say, you know what, you know, things are fine at home and things are great with my family. And then we speak with their spouse and we hear a very, very different story. It's no, things are not really good at home. And they're not home, and it's exhausting right now because I feel like I'm just on my own. And we hear, you know, that story. So I think that there's lots of pastors who are actually blind to that. That they just don't know. Things really suffer, and you just become more and more fearful, and you can start to actually pull away from your spouse and your family, because you think, gosh, I don't even know if I want my spouse to know just the depth of my, you know, sin, whatever it might be.
Do you think that it was partly because the spouse, the wife, is there as the champion and feels like she needs to encourage her husband in the ministry, and therefore she's trying to help him, but she's also not giving him the kind of counsel that he needs to spend more time with the family?
That's exactly right. And you know what, the spouse, I think, is in a very tough place, because they oftentimes really feel like there's no place where I can go and just be open and honest. And we have, you know, calls from a lot of spouses who say, I have no place to go just to talk with my, you know, just to process all of this. And I feel like, I'm just completely on my own. And if a spouse finds a safe place to go to just talk and process, it's just unbelievable. And I, you know, this is very, very much in my mind, because this whole week I was at a big, big conference with lots of spouses there. And we heard from so many spouses, I have no place to go. We saw tears all throughout the week of, you know, that my spouse is just going nonstop, and I just don't know how to slow things down, and it really hurts our marriage. And yet my pastor, oftentimes said, I mean, I just kind of have this sense that like my husband has no idea about these things, and he thinks everything is absolutely great, but I am just so drained. And it's just over and over, I have no place to go just to talk this through. So they were so grateful this week just to have that place to go that was safe and confidential. And wow, they just unloaded. It was very powerful this week.
Now, this is something you kind of learned out of the necessity when you were in your own ministry and you needed to find these relationships. What was the kind of process? What did it look like as you were realizing what you were lacking in relationship?
Well, yeah. I mean, I tell you what, for me, I had probably a good 16 years where, I mean, like, I did not have those things, where I just had this fear and really some big shame. I thought, okay, you know what, if I have to have a coach, that's almost like actually saying that I'm not competent in some areas. And gosh, I went to Wheaton College. I went to school at Gordon Conwell Seminary, did right there in Massachusetts. And I mean, I've been trained in some of the best schools and the best professors, and I've been to the best conferences. And if I say that I have to have a coach, gosh, there's some real shame in that, because I feel like I should know these things. That's a crazy mindset, because we have that mindset in the church. But you know what, though? It's not anywhere in sports, because if you're an athlete, you know, I've got to have a coach. I've got to have a coach to help me to grow and to get better in my skills and to just really work on some things. And oftentimes I hear from pastors, well, you know what, I would have a coach, but I want to have a coach that's a lot more skilled than I am. And I want to have a coach who's in a church that was much larger than mine, because I think that if I have a coach that's really kind of been through everything that I've been through, that's the very best coach. And I just laugh at that. And I just want to say, do you think that Dean Smith could beat Michael Jordan in basketball? Trust me, he couldn't. But he was a phenomenal coach. Why? Because he brought insight. He brought things that, you know, that just Michael couldn't see. And so he helped him out in so many areas. And that's just accepted in coaching. Almost every athlete can beat their coach. Almost every athlete can. And yet in the church, we have this mindset, well, I don't know if I want to be coached by anybody that's not a big superstar. And that's just a crazy mindset. So, you know, there were so many of these, you know, crazy ways that I thought I just can't have a coach, because there's some real shame in that. And if I do have a coach, I want to have a guy that's way, way above me. And I was very arrogant and very prideful and thought, well, that's got to be a star pastor, and I don't think that there's any out there available. So for years and years and years, I didn't have a coach. Things like counseling. I stayed away from counseling for a long time because there was just that fear of, man, if my church knows that I have a counselor, they're going to say, wow, I thought the Holy Spirit was your counselor. And aren't you supposed to be able to just, you know, process this stuff? And you're a counselor. So if you're going to a counselor, I don't understand, because you're a counselor, I think you should be able to process all this stuff yourself, which is just ridiculous. And so once those things just, I thought, you know what, I need a counselor and I need to have a coach and I need to have a mentor and I need to be trained more and more. Once I just let, you know, just those things were just let go, just all the pride and shame and arrogance and all those things, it was just life transformational to just start to have those roles, which brought me out just out of all of this isolation. And it was life changing. And that's what every pastor needs. They need to not live their lives just in isolation where they think, I can't talk about these things because there's guilt and shame and everything else. They need to come out of just that place of darkness and be encouraged and be loved and be helped and coached and trained and counseled.
Now, the pastoral ministry is rather attractive to a lot of type A personalities, a lot of mavericks who have these very big visions and ideas that often cause them to become even more isolated. Have you found that it's difficult to convince pastors of this need? You said you had so many pastors calling you, expressing their need, but is it also something that you struggle in convincing pastors of their need?
Well, that's a great question as well. You know, it's very interesting because oftentimes young pastors, maybe like in years 1 through 3, most oftentimes they don't think that they really have a need. They have this really strong, well, I've been to school and I'm called and I think I can do everything. And there's a really strong sense that they don't need help. And then about year 4, it's amazing how oftentimes it's, all right, maybe I wasn't taught everything I needed to learn in my schooling, and there might be some things that I don't know. That's often times that point where I think that they just break and say, okay, I have to have some help. Or they break and say, this is not what I signed up for, and I don't want to be a pastor anymore. That's what's really heartbreaking. That's what just is so hard to see. You know, someone who's very gifted, and you can just sense that they have a calling, that they have gifts, that they have all these things, but all of a sudden they learn, wait a second, it's not just preaching and teaching, but I have to read a spreadsheet, and I have to hire, and I have to fire, and I have to train leaders. I don't think I was ever trained in that. So because I don't really feel competent to do everything I'm called to do, I don't think this is the right thing. And it really hurts. It really hurts when they start to see more and more conflict in their church and they think, I was never trained in conflict resolution and I don't know what to do there. And then they start to get some arrows in the back shot by their own people. And that can be very, very disillusioning for people when they say, you know what, I'm done. This is not what I signed up for. So I'm done. So oftentimes there's that point where it's just that, okay, I've got to have some help or this is not the right thing for me. Now, What's really tough is those who just keep on going and say, I don't want to get help, but I don't know, you know, what in the eighth, you know, and I don't think I have like any other job, so I'm just going to stay at this. But I want to pose and pretend my whole way through it. That's what's heartbreaking, because you want to say, don't go through life as a pastor and just pretend. I mean, don't do, it's exhausting. Get help, reach out, find that coach and that counselor and that mentor and that friend and that champion for you.
Now, part of this is as you're framing this in the context of a deeper understanding of the gospel, which I think is so important. And yet we're talking about pastors who are called to be the shepherds, the communicators, the beacon of the gospel in their own churches. It's still something where pastors and ministers were susceptible to losing sight of the gospel in the midst of a storm. So talk to us a little bit about how to get back that gospel perspective.
Man, I love that question. And, you know, we have lots of talks with pastors, and almost every talk actually starts out exactly the same way that we say, you know, that you will, share with us your heart and your burdens and some things in the church that might not be going well and things in your marriage and your life or whatever it might be. We know because we've had thousands of these talks with pastors, that there will be a little part of you that wants to hold back and say, I don't know if I can share everything. I think I want to share a bunch of my story, but I don't think I can share actually all of my story. But you know what? We know that it's very, very likely a lot worse than what you actually say. But we want you to know that we love you in the midst of all of these things, because we know that you need the gospel and we need the gospel. We are both broken. So when you share your story about your brokenness, it's not a shock to us, because we are all broken people. We are all desperately broken people that need Jesus. If we wouldn't, look, if our lives weren't really broken, you know what? We wouldn't need Jesus. But we have to have Jesus because we are very, very broken people. We don't think that you are in the midst of a huge mess, and we're not. It's not like, boy, you're really broken, but you know what? We're not. We need to have God's grace just as much as you need to have God's grace. There is nothing that you can do to make God love you more. There is nothing that you can do to make God love you less. The answer is not on the inside. The answer is not, hey, have more courage and more faith and just be just a lot more motivated. The answer is on the outside. You know what? The answer is absolutely Jesus Christ. You know what? There's no list here as far as, well, to, you know, fix your life, you need to do these 15 things. There's no list, because listen, Jesus is our list. That's the joy of the gospel. Jesus is our list. Every religion in the world has a list of things. And if you're a Jew, you do these 10 things to be right with God. And if you're Muslim, you do these 5 things to be right with God. And if you're a Buddhist, you do these 8 things to be right with God. Every religion has a list, except Jesus. That's what makes it so very, very, you know, extremely unusual as far as Christianity, because Jesus is our list. It's a person. And we find that we have to preach the gospel to people every day. And what's also really, it's just oftentimes really hard to hear is we share the gospel with a lot of pastors who say, I have never heard that in my entire life. I've never heard the basic grace in which you're speaking of. I've never heard this in my entire life. And I'm telling you, that breaks our heart, because there are a lot of pastors out there that have never really heard the gospel. And maybe, you know, that they've preached, hey, you know, that here's a list. Don't, you know, if you want to be right with God, don't smoke and don't drink and don't have tattoos and watch Fox News and vote for whoever, you know, and which is just, I think that makes God throw up, because there's no list. Jesus is our list, period.
And what would you say to people who are wanting to support and they pray for their pastor, they love their pastor, but they want to do more. They want to be a better member of their congregation and minister to their pastor. What advice would you have for them?
Gosh, you know what? That's a great question. Once again, one I would say, you know what? Guard your pastor's back. just have that mindset of, you know what, don't mess with my pastor. Do not gossip against my pastor. Don't slander my pastor. And if you hear slander, if you hear gossip, speak up and say, listen, everybody has got weaknesses. Let's care for our pastor. Let's just watch over him. And just know, every pastor, everybody has lots of strengths and lots of weaknesses. That's just the way it always is in life. And so be much more gracious as far as weaknesses. And just know, you know what, that might be, you know, he might not be the best as far as like administration, or he might not really, really enjoy things like the hospital visit. That's okay, because he's got lots of areas in which he's very strong. Just acknowledge that. And then, yeah, pray for your pastor. One thing that we do, which is so simple, is we have a text that goes out every day to thousands and thousands of pastors, or just like all over the world, that says, hey, pray for your pastor today. And here's just one short thing. Just, you know, pray today for their passion, that they will love Jesus. Pray today that they will really, really understand the gospel. And it's so easy to do. If you just actually text the word pastor, P-A-S-T-O-R, to 74574, then each day you will have a short text that just says, hey, pray for your pastor today. And it will come, I think on the East Coast, it comes every day at about 12:12. But it's just a phenomenal reminder each day. Okay, this is just, you know, this is a small thing. And take even just a short time, even a minute, and just say, Lord, today for my pastor, I pray this prayer, and I pray that you would bless them in their marriage. I pray you would just bless them in their parenting, and help them to really, really believe the gospel today, and help them to see more of you today. And Lord, I pray that they would be open with their weaknesses this day. And I mean, just to pray those things for your pastor, that will transform your pastor's life. That brings deep life change. So once again, that's just pastor to 74574. So these are just a few things, but there's a lot more things I think that you can also do.
The book is called Survive or Thrive. We've been talking with the author, Jimmy Dodd, a pastor to pastors, about 6 relationships every pastor needs. Thank you, Jimmy, so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks so much, and thanks for your work. And I know that this is a great station, Adam, so I'm just very, very grateful for your heart for pastors and the church. So what you guys do is awesome. So thank you very, very much to everybody at Songtime.
We hope you enjoyed this interview made possible by our ministry at Songtime Radio. You can find out more information about our ministry by visiting our website at songtime.com, where you can find this and other interviews on our podcast series, as well as our weekday broadcast, which includes teaching, interviews, and music. We also want to encourage you to sign up for our free monthly newsletter. It's got encouraging articles, and there is no obligation. To find out more information about our ministry, again, visit our website at songtime.com. This ministry is made possible by people just like yourself. We are 100% supported by our listeners. So if you have been blessed today, why not join with the many voices together for that one message, the gospel of Jesus Christ, with your donation to the Songtime Ministry. To make a donation, you can do so online at our website at songtime.com, as well as by mail. Write to us at Songtime Radio, P.O. Box 100, Barnstable, Massachusetts, 02630, or give us a call. Make a donation over the phone. It's 508-362-7070. On behalf of our entire Songtime staff and our own Dr. John DeBrine, the founder here at Songtime, who encourages you to grow in grace and not groan in disgrace, from Cape Cod, I'm Adam Miller. God bless.